You're a dime a dozen, you gay loser.
You're on the football team and had everyone wear makeup. Classic gay experience.
Your best friend spit in your English teacher's face. Snore.
Outed with a poem in English class. Yeah, I know.
Your girlfriend drew you nude and then everyone saw it. Old news, bucko.
Oh, Dawson, look, there's your mom.
Back to you, Bob.
And welcome to Back to You, Bob, a Dawson's Creek podcast. We are your hosts, Christina and Micah, and this is episode 311, Barefoot at Cape Fest, which originally aired on January 12th, 2000.
So this is the first episode of the calendar year, and we've survived Y2K.
I know.
Do you remember where you were?
I was going to say, what did you do?
I remember where I was. It was one of those things where, like, looking back on my life, she's not like a good friend, but there was this period in high school where I made friends with this girl and she was cool, but not in like a popular way and like a kind of like Janine Garofalo and Romy Michelle kind of way. And
sure,
I was only friends with her for like 6 or 7 months or something. For some reason, I spent New Year's Eve at her house. And it was one of those things where, like, when I went to her house, she lived in like a mansion in the country. She had a pool. She had a pool house. She had a trampoline. She had all of these things.
Whoa.
I spent Y2K New Year's Eve there. And I remember we all thought at midnight, you know, like the world was going to crash. And so, like, we called our parents, like, at, like, 12:01, like, Happy New Year. Is everything okay? And I was 16, so, yeah, what a memory.
What a memory. At a mansion in the country.
Yeah. It was just a curveball, you know?
Was that your first time at her house?
Yeah, and only.
Wow. And you walked in, you were like, oh, my God.
It was awesome.
That is awesome. I was not allowed to go out. I had plans, and my parents made me stay home. They ended up throwing a party at our house, which not for my friends, for their friends. And they were like, we want you to stay home because they were afraid of Y2K. I don't know what they thought was going to happen.
Were you mad at your parents?
I think, you know, there's a certain age where you like take your parents' word for what it is. And I remember being really upset and like being bratty about it, but not like a screaming match. I was just like, oh, this is so annoying. Not like, screw you guys, you know?
Yeah. Well, here we are, January 12th.
We survived.
What are we drinking for episode 311, Barefoot at Cape Fest?
We are drinking Barefoot and Boozy, which is a half cup of orange juice, 4 ounces of white rum, 8 ounces of coconut water with pineapple juice, and just some ice. So light, so refreshing, such a good summer drink, which is where we are actually in the calendar. I love coconut water.
I love coconut water. I don't love rum, but if you love rum, then you should make this.
Yeah.
How yummy.
But it's not too sweet.
Yeah.
Because of the coconut water. It's not like pina colada status.
Pina colada. Well, I'm going to dive right into the recap.
Do it.
This is episode 311, Barefoot at Cape Fest. And it opens with Dawson telling Joey how excited he is to be using a new camera from the school's film department. It will make his movies look more realistic and more like film. He arrives to check it out to find that Nikki, the new arrival from the film festival in the last episode, has already beaten him to it and has checked it out for the entire month. This sends them further into a rivalry. Back at home, Gail has started moving out a lot of the furniture from the house. With the arrangements of the new setup, Mitch will be living at the house with Dawson and Gail has her own place nearby. Joey pushes Dawson to express his feelings about this because she could tell it bothers him, but he says that he doesn't really have any feelings about it. He later goes to Nikki and Principal Green's house to hash out the camera business when Principal Green invites him to stay for dinner. And he learns and we learn more about Nikki. Being a director in film has been a childhood dream of hers, just like Dawson. And later when Dawson gets a look at Nikki's bedroom, he sees that she has so many interests. She has so many posters. She's interested in culture and music, etc. And he's kind of blown away by this because his room is just a shrine to Spielberg. Nikki says what she loves about film is that it allows her to cover all of the things she's passionate about. If Dawson only cares about movies, then he's just going to make movies about movies. What are his other interests? And this is when we see the two of them start to bond, and she opens up about how she's the child of divorce and how angry it makes her and how her parents keep shuffling her back and forth. And that is what her new film is about. That's what she's using the camera to make. When she asks Dawson about his parents' divorce, he says, you know, most of the time he's fine with it, and that might be because he's self-obsessed. But when he really thinks about it, he realizes that he's the byproduct of something that didn't work out. And what is life supposed to look like if the primary examples he has of love didn't make it. What does this mean for him? So later, Joey enters Dawson's bedroom to find that he has taken down all of his Spielberg posters. And she is so confused because she knows how important these are to him. He tells Joey that when he was at Nikki's house, he realized that he has a singular focus and it's time to grow up and expand his horizons a little bit. It doesn't take Joey long to figure out that this is about his parents. And he tells her that when he was talking to Nikki, he realized his feelings about it. Joey is very offended by this because she even asked Dawson what he felt and he wouldn't open up to her. Joey thinks that Dawson is a sellout. Because first there was Eve and now there's Nikki, and he just throws his entire personality and identity away whenever a new girl breezes into town. He doesn't think he's throwing his identity away, he thinks he's trying to figure out what his identity is, and they get into a huge fight. He's not sure how this became about Joey. He says whenever he expresses an iota of interest in another girl, she goes crazy and attacks him like some kind of criminal. He deliberately has not asked her about her college guy, AJ, once because of this, and she says that's just as bad as what she does to him. It's a pretty bad fight and she storms off. Later, she comes back with the poster of Imagine by John Lennon. And she reminds him that when they were kids, they used to listen to the Beatles on the front porch. Back then, Dawson wanted to be John Lennon and write songs that changed the world. He wasn't always just about Spielberg. She tells him that he is not limited. She wanted to remind him of this and they make up. And she asks him to please keep sharing with her, even though she does get jealous sometimes. So together, they hang up the new poster on the bare walls. And this is a nice scene for the two of them. Jack, meanwhile, runs into Ethan, the guy he met on the train last episode. Now, Ethan is from Capeside, but he goes to college out of town. But he's back this weekend for Capefest, which is an all-weekend-long concert. After he mentions it to Jack, who has no idea about it, Jack convinces Jen to go so he can see Ethan. Throughout the episode, Jack and Ethan grow closer, and the dynamic here is kind of like Ethan is Jack's gay Yoda. You know, Ethan's out, he's at college, he's been out for a while, so he's kind of mentoring Jack on how to navigate this. There's definitely a flirtation between them, and they talk about why neither of them asked for the other's number when they first met on the train. Ethan realizes that Jack is mainly concerned about sex and romance when it comes to being gay, but those are just a tiny part of it. Ethan helps Jack realize that there's more to it than just that. Being gay informs all of your interests and your personality, not just your sexual preference. It appears like Ethan is interested, but Jack is getting mixed signals. At the end of the episode, they decide to exchange information. Ethan doesn't think Jack is ready for anything romantic, but he wants to be friends and thinks that's what Jack needs right now. Friends is a good place to start. So Jack actually ends up making his first gay friend, Ethan. While Jack gets to know Ethan at the concert, he exiles Jen from their tent. And she runs into Henry, who is really pissed off about how Jen led him on and broke his heart. She says they are just friends. She never intended for anything more than that. But he asks, are they? He's been giving her the cold shoulder and ignoring her for a month, and she hasn't even noticed. Jen spends the night with Henry, getting to know him better, and she realizes that there's a lot more to him than she thought. He's more passionate and deeper than she initially interpreted him to be. She apologizes for being careless with his heart, and she thinks in some way Henry might be even more mature than she is. Even though he's 2 years younger. She starts to realize maybe she made a mistake being so hasty and dismissing him. So meanwhile, Andy has become hellbent on being the assistant director of the school play, Barefoot in the Park. She talks her way into the position through a very bitter and dismissive English teacher slash director, Mr. Broderick. Unbeknownst to Andy, Mr. Broderick has promised one of the roles to a student so the student can get a passing grade. And to Andy's surprise, it's Pacey. Mr. Broderick is going to give him a C to do the play. Andy tells Pacey that part of the reason she's doing this is to get over him and give herself focus, but instead it's another thing that he has to come in on. She's trying to get him to quit. She says Mr. Broderick is insane and Pacey's bad acting might just be enough to throw him over the edge, but he refuses. When Mr. Broderick doesn't show up for rehearsals, Andy steps in and kills it. Later he comes back and doesn't give Andy any credit to fix it. She wants to quit, but Pacey convinces her not to. And that is episode 311, Barefoot at Capefest.
It's a good one.
It is a good one.
The tides are turning.
We've talked about this like mid-season three era where I really don't remember much of it. And I always think of it as being bad because I love the beginning of season three and I love the end of season three. But there was always a middle that I never really rewatched. And I really was shocked at how much I liked this episode, I must say.
Yeah. And we owe it to the writers, Hadley Davis and Bonnie Sikowitz. If you remember, they were with us for episode 303, None of the Above, which was the PSAT episode. So if you want to hear more about their careers, you can go back and listen to that episode. And it was directed by Jan Eliasberg, who is new to us. Actually, this is her only episode of Dawson's Creek. She has a bunch of credits. She has an episode of Early Edition, 3 episodes of Party of Five, 4 episodes of Strong Medicine, which if you remember was created by Tammy Ader, who wrote 301 Like a Virgin. We went into that series a little bit in that episode. She has some Supernaturals, Nashville, but she hasn't directed since 2018. So I dug in a little bit and she's actually a writer now. She has a bunch of screenplays with different stars attached. None of them seem to be in production currently, but she also wrote a novel that was released in 2020 called Hannah's War. So it seems like she's just like fully committing to the writing lifestyle these days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who knew? Maybe she's trying to get something going by writing and then she'll direct it and then she'll adapt it and pop, 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 pop.
Totally. Definitely seems that way. So we wish her the best.
So who is your guest cast shout out for this episode?
The guest cast shout out, as we've discussed, needs to go to Bianca Lawson. Oh, I do want to say there are a few great candidates in this episode. It was actually really hard to pick. We have to give it to Bianca Lawson because obviously she's a legend and we didn't give it to her on her first episode, but it was tough. So I'm hoping we can find times to shout out the other folks who are in this episode. She is, like we mentioned, an actress who's been playing a teenager for about 30 years. It's incredible. She was first on my radar in Saved by the Bell, The New Class.
Absolutely.
Did you watch that?
Absolutely.
Yes. She's 45 now. I swear to God, she was playing a teenager up until like the pandemic. Like, she is just one of those young faces. She went on to have episodes of Sister, Sister, Buffy, Secret Life of an American Teenager, Pretty Little Liars, Vampire Diaries, Teen Wolf. Obviously, she's with us for an arc of 4 episodes on Dawson's. Most recently, she was in Queen Sugar, which I know people loved. I personally have never watched, but I feel like that was a show when it was on that people were like talking about all the time at work. It was like one of those shows that people tuned into.
I watched the first 2 seasons. It was really good.
And I can't remember if we touched on this or not last episode when we talked about her briefly, but she is stepsister to Beyonce and Solange.
No.
Her dad married Tina Knowles. Her dad is Tina Knowles' second husband.
Yes.
How about that?
Legit, she was playing a teenager in the early 90s, mid-90s on Saved by the Bell, The New Class. And then in like 2012, I'd say, 2011, she was playing a teenager on Pretty Little Liars still. So there was at least a 15-year gap, maybe longer.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not an exaggeration when we say that she's played a teenager for 30 years. At least 20.
Yes.
Well, praise God.
Praise God.
I wonder what their like Thanksgivings are like. Like, does Bianca Lawson sit down with Beyonce?
I know. How are you introduced into that family? Is it like, hey, or is it just like, keep your distance?
It's crazy. Remember when we saw Beyonce?
Yeah. How could I forget? Remember when you literally rubbed elbows with Jay-Z?
We just had the 10-year anniversary.
That's insane.
Producer Beth, it was her 30th birthday. We went to a restaurant in LA. There was like 8 or 9 of us. I was sitting at the end of the table. When they sat us down, they were like, oh, this table was reserved. Now it's not anymore. It was weird.
It was weird.
And then Beyonce and Jay-Z walked in with someone else and sat down next to us. And we were all white knuckling the table. You know, we wanted to like be cool. And we have a friend who is a nurse who doesn't know anything about pop culture, doesn't watch TV, doesn't listen to pop music.
Nothing.
Like, she's like a Martian. And we were all freaking out. She literally was like, who is it? Who is it?
Well, it's funny because our waiter was like, oh, we have a special birthday present coming for you, like making weird comments. So they had like a dessert with a candle coming out and they're like, and here comes your present. Like, he whispered to her, and behind him was Jay-Z and Beyonce and their friends. So when that friend who doesn't know anyone, like, we were all like waiting to see who it was. And then we were like, oh my God. And she was just sitting there with like a blank face. Like, who is it?
And then we were like, someone text Tara. That it's Beyonce. Someone text Sarah and tell her. I think once we said Jay-Z, she knew, but she would, I really don't think she'd know Beyonce if she fell over, which she almost did, but she would know Jay-Z.
And it was amazing.
Anyway, music moment, eh?
Oh my gosh, so many in this one for me. What's yours?
I don't know if I have any that like stick out just because I didn't really watch this episode a lot.
Fair enough. For me, the one that feels very Dawson's to me is The Frog by Rilo Kiley. I love that song. It brings me back to Dawson's. It brings me back to this like place and time. I don't remember the scene per se. Like, it didn't bring me back to the scene, but the song itself definitely brings me back. And then I had no memory of Henry singing Bruce Springsteen.
Absolutely not.
He started singing and I was like, excuse me? He's singing No Surrender by Bruce Springsteen. No, not a memory. So that was fun for me. And then obviously Imagine plays in the last scene, which again, I don't tie it to Dawson's, but I was really, even in the Hulu version with all the new music, they felt it was necessary to license this song and they got it. So it's just a nice moment.
I will say listening, first of all, I was shocked that they were able to get the Beatles. I mean, I imagine that's an expensive get, but then I'm shocked that it's still on the street with all the streaming drama and the music rights drama.
Yeah.
This, they got Imagine. I don't know. That really shocked me.
There are a couple songs this season that I'm shocked made it to streaming.
Yeah.
We'll get to them.
We'll get to them. Past versus present, I will say, I used to always think that Joey and Dawson's jealousy was just always so naggy, but now I fully get why Joey is mad. That would really hurt me and bother me if I asked my best friend, you know, you could talk to me, tell me what you're feeling. They say nothing, and then they go to someone they just met, and they're like, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. But then also on the flip side, with the distance, the 25-year distance, I also know there's like a comfort in talking to someone you barely know. You could tell someone you barely know things that you cannot tell people that are close to you sometimes.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. I just saw this fight on like a deeper level on both sides. It used to seem really petty, but now I'm like, oh, it's actually kind of deep, that fight.
Joey bothered me a lot more in this episode this time around than she did the first time around. I'm not annoyed by her reaction of like jealousy, but that fight where they are in his room and they have the first like breakdown where they're yelling at each other and he's like, you're yelling. And she's like, you're yelling, really bothered me. And I was like, I'm actually kind of team Dawson right now. Like he's the one going through it. My point is just that I found her really grating this episode.
I have to say I disagree, and I will say there were a lot of scenes in this episode. A lot of the scenes are very short. Jen and Henry scenes are very short. Jack and Ethan scenes are very short. There was a lot of scenes. Katie Holmes, I counted, I'm pretty sure it was only in four. She was in the cold open, the Gail's moving her furniture out scene, the fight scene, and the makeup scene. And like, I missed Katie Holmes in this episode. I feel like there was a long gap where she wasn't in it. And I was, you know, I just love Joey.
You know what? And when you pose it that way, like I loved her in the cold open, which we'll get to. I mean, she barely spoke, but just her face acting really made me happy. She's being very supportive in the Gail and Dawson scene. And then in the end scene, I really liked her. So I guess it's just that fight moment. Something about that fight moment triggered me for her. And overall, it is actually a very good Joey episode. So thank you. I take it back.
I see what you're saying. But yeah, I mean, it's because they're falling back into that old, like,
yes,
I own you, I'm jealous.
That's exactly annoying. What it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what triggered me.
And he's kind of grown and she hasn't.
Yes, because he's, generally speaking, the more annoying of the two in the fights for me. So
Let's open it up.
Let's open it up. I love this cold open. I love that Dawson has this little, like, adversary, Nikki, but also it's a friendly thing. And I love that this was Joey's real first introduction to Nikki, and Joey's face when she realizes that Nikki is like standing her ground and like basically giving it to Dawson a little bit. Joey's like, yeah, like Joey is all about it. And I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Yeah. Katie Holmes is classic in this. And also Nikki knows Joey because of the witch documentary.
Right. I think
she knows. She's like, Joey, right? And so she at least knows the dynamic a little bit.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, they are. Nikki is like a auteur and she's a filmmaker. And now Dawson has some
competition.
He has some competition. Yeah, he's not the only filmmaker. Okay.
Okay. She brought up during the film festival, like, what's the Joey story? That's the story. That's the movie. So she definitely is familiar. I didn't catch that.
And who knew Cape Set High had such like a high tech film department? Good Lord.
Oh my gosh, incredible.
I mean, we've talked about the gaps in education at that school, but it is not in the film department.
I don't even think, I mean, maybe we must have had at least a video camera at my high school because we did make some projects, but barely.
Barely? We didn't have that.
So Jack sees Ethan in the grocery store.
At Molly's Market, this is where I believe Andy's mom had her breakdown season two. This is where Pacey and Jen went Thanksgiving shopping for food.
Smelled each other.
it's a staple of Cape Side. Yes, Jack runs into Ethan, who lives in Cape Side, goes to college somewhere else, and Ethan's like, I'm here for Cape Fest. Jack has no idea what Cape Fest is, and Ethan like shames him. How do you not know what Cape Fest is?
One of us lives here all year round.
And then Ethan's like, who's your favorite Foo Fighter? And Jack says Courtney Love.
Loved that moment. But yeah, he's like, you know what, that was cute, you were wrong, but come anyway.
Look, I'm just going to say it. Everyone hates Henry for some reason. Not for some reason. Everyone hates Henry. I think Henry gets a lot of hate. I hate Ethan and I hate AJ. I mean, AJ's not in this episode. But as far as season three boyfriends go, Henry doesn't even clock the top three most hated characters of the season, I don't think, for me.
What is it specifically?
I can't stand Ethan. He's so condescending.
He is.
The whole time. You don't know what Capus is? Oh, I'm going to gay-splain everything? I can't stand this man.
He's like, oh, you thought I didn't like you because I fell asleep?
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to... Ugh.
I don't love them, but I do love Jack, and he's very cute in this scene. And when Ethan walks away, he like goes up on his tippy toes to look at him over the shelf. It was very cute. Jack's a star. Jen comes over.
Well, Jack's a star, obviously.
She says he's cute, and Jack goes, gay. She goes, aren't they all? Gay.
I know. Jen and Jack are so cute together.
Love them.
Can we talk about...
Okay, wait. Go. What?
Mr. Broderick?
Oh, no. Okay, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
About Gail taking all the furniture, but we'll get there. We can do Mr. Broderick first.
Mr. Broderick is the English teacher / play director, and Andy wants to be the assistant director. He is so mean.
He is such a mess.
What is it with English teachers at the school? There was Miss Jacobs, then there was... This is spitting in the face of the education system, Mr. Peterson. And now Mr. Broderick. What is happening at this school?
I don't know.
They're all like in some way abusers.
Yeah.
Awful.
I don't know. Like, I think he has a Troom disorder or something. Like, he might be bipolar. He needs meds.
Yeah. Which Andy says, like, he's on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Yeah. And he keeps having breakdowns. But she talks her way into that role.
I mean, whoever doubted her? No one.
She will not take no for an answer. And she gets the position. And then we're off to the Leary house, to the empty. Gail has stripped it bare.
Except for the weird statue of a woman in the foreground.
She has left her son with nothing.
No. And she's like, I didn't want dad to warn you, basically. She's like, Mitch wanted to tell you about this, but I wanted it to come from me. You didn't want to give Dawson a heads up. You wanted to traumatize him and have him come home and have there be no furniture in the house. And then she's like, you got to keep being strong. It's really helping us out. Like, classic 90s parents having no clue how things affect children. It was crazy to me. That was crazy. Keep being positive.
I mean, Team Gail. I love Gail.
She just took all the furniture.
Unlike Mitch, Gail's apartment doesn't have a steel cage. So she needs all the furniture she can get. And good for her. You know, she paid for that furniture.
No, she deserves the furniture. But to not tell Dawson that he's going to come home to an empty house felt a little bit like a choice. But you know what? Go off, Gail. You do you.
I know. That is wild. And the female statue is bizarre.
Bizarre.
I just love the Leary house.
I know you do.
I just love a wood moment.
It's a quite big house without all the furniture in it.
But Dawson has no feelings. Joey's like, tell me how you feel. And he's like, nope, I have no feelings.
Well, he's like still trying to figure that out. Okay, Dawson, you got it, dude. Then do we go to camping at Cape Fest, setting up camp?
Yeah, they're setting up camps. They're setting up tents for this Cape Fest thing. I don't know.
I love a camp moment. I thought it looked so dreamy. I want to go camping in a field.
You do love a camp moment. You go camping all the time.
I love camping. And I took Micah camping for his first ever time camping.
Yeah, at Joshua Tree.
It reminded me of this because we went to go camping at Joshua Tree and it was a holiday weekend. We didn't think about this. We didn't have reservations and there were no spots in Joshua Tree. So we got kicked to an overflow lot. Which was just a big open field with tents in it, which was fine. But in the middle of the night, Micah set off his car alarm.
No, it wasn't the middle of the night. It was like 5 a.m.
Oh, in my head, it was like 3 a.m.
No, I couldn't sleep anymore because I couldn't sleep at all because it was a rock ground. And I got out and trying to get in my car like 5 a.m. I set the alarms off.
So basically,
I woke the whole freaking... I woke up the whole freaking camp field or whatever you call it. Oh my God. I do remember. I think about that too.
That was really funny.
Anyway, camping's not for me, but you love camping.
I love it. I do now in my advanced age prefer it on an air mattress, but I do love camping.
Jen is like me. She can't set this tent up. No.
Jack leaves her for like an hour and she has made zero progress on the tent.
And she finds Henry there cooking veggie burgers. He's a veggie burger vendor, apparently.
Yes. Who knew?
Jack of all trades, this one. He's a handy boy. He's cooking veggie burgers. He plays the guitar. He's a football star.
The guy who points Jen in the direction of Henry says, "This guy's a genius with veggie burgers." Like there's some sort of secret. It's a really funny layer to Henry's. Like, I feel like we just keep picking up little details about Henry that are so funny.
I know. And he's so cute. When I was watching this scene, this is the scene where he rips into her and she's kind of like, whoa, and why are you so mad? And he's like, you led me on. You broke my heart. You haven't talked to me in a month. But I was just watching this scene and I was like, it's crazy that we're watching a scene with Michelle Williams and Michael Pitt, who have gone on to like be nominated for Oscars and Emmys. And we were watching little powerhouses. We didn't even know it.
We didn't even know it. It's so true. He is really cute in this episode. Like, I think he's really cute in every episode, but I thought this episode he was particularly cute.
I think we're alone on that. I think everyone hates Henry.
Yeah, maybe.
We are the hot takes. We like Eve. We like Andy. I like Andy.
You do like Andy.
We like Henry. That's what makes the world go round. We all have different, we all have different opinions.
It's either what makes the world go round or what's going to make the world burn.
What do you think about Nikki Green? I like Nikki Green.
I love Nikki Green, personally. She's kind of like an Andy, honestly. She did all of this due diligence before she got there. She's a real go-getter. She spoke to the film teacher. She set herself up for success before she even got to the school. And I love that about her. I love that she knows what she wants. She's here to make her film or whatever. She has her little crew. She's not trying to make friends, but she's also nice and personable. I feel like a lot of times these characters are not personable, so they don't have friends, they don't fit into the group in any way. It's just like they're somebody to bump up against, and Nikki's kind of a full-fledged person.
Yeah, I think Bianca brings a layer to it. I think as an actress, she just brings layers, and I think she's very likable, but I could see how a different actress would have made the character more one-note because she's so adversarial with Dawson. But we find out, he goes to confront her and says, like, don't be rude to me. You can't take the camera for a month. It has a 7-week checkout, whatever. And she says, I didn't take the camera because of you. This isn't personal. I just want to make my movie. Principal Green invites Dawson over for dinner. And we find out that, like, Nikki is just as passionate about film as Dawson through, like, Principal Green's little background information that he gives Dawson. And it's cute.
It is cute. And also their house is amazing. They live like on this little water moment with this big front porch, a porch swing.
Yeah. White wicker furniture. Grandfather clock.
Love it.
And then we go up to her room and Dawson is like blown away that she has interests. She has a Lauryn Hill poster. She's very into her culture. She likes music. She has other passions besides film, and furthering her interest in these topics, making movies about them, is what she loves to do.
And she says to Dawson, if all you care about is movies, then you're only going to make movies about movies. And boy, is she right.
And that's what we've seen him do for 3 years.
Yep.
Just imitating kind of Spielberg themes and movies. So this is actually a great Dawson episode.
It is. Actually. It really is. She also says to him, like, he's surprised, like you said, about everything she has going on in her room. And she goes, let me guess, your room is all Spielberg one sheets. Which it is, obviously, that's classically what Dawson's room is. But I did not know that a movie poster was called a one sheet until like 5 years ago.
I didn't know that until 5 seconds ago.
There you go. I never heard that. Their industry knowledge runs deep. But yeah, that's what they call posters.
I just really liked that this season, Eve came and challenged him like socially and I guess sexually, you could say. And Nikki has now come and is challenging him kind of professionally almost. Mm-hmm. So it feels like he's met two girls now who are pushing him outside of his box and his comfort zone, which I think is much needed because after 2 seasons, it was all getting a little familiar.
Yeah. And he's so confident and like he's just so firmly footed in this persona of a filmmaker to have somebody come in and be like, ask questions and really test that, I think is so interesting and important. And especially as an audience who's been like frustrated by him, which maybe you weren't, but I was as a viewer. It was a nice release to have someone be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it was a really good episode. It was a pivotal episode that I don't really think about much.
So Andy and Mr. Broderick are holding auditions for this play. And did you notice the guy with the chokers?
Yes. So what was that about? A gay theater kid or what? I don't know.
It was really hard for me to tell what his vibe was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Very hard. He was
supposed to be gay theater teen.
There was like a nerd, a football jock type, and then a guy with some chokers.
Yeah.
And then they go through. They don't think they found their lead. And Mr. Broderick says, I have someone in mind. And Andy's like, who? Look at this stack of papers. And he's like, no, this guy is a genius with comedy or something like that. And on pops Pacey Witter.
Comedy legend.
Andy is not excited.
No. When she tells Pacey, you know, I've been doing this to get over you. I need focus. Stop coming into my space. You need to quit. And Pacey's like, I'm not quitting. I need that C. And she's like, C, what happened to you? Like, you were such a good student when I was with you. But he's not quitting.
He's not quitting. She's not quitting. They're in it. How did you feel about that? Did you feel like one of them, did you feel like Andy should have just quit if she wanted to not be with him? Or were you like, no, stay?
How did I feel about it? Or what did I think about it?
Like, what'd you think about it?
I wouldn't quit if I was either of them.
Yeah, same.
I could see her point. You know, it is annoying when you start something and then like someone else does it and you don't like them and you're just like, oh, get out of here. You know, that person who keeps popping up and you just want to just like.
Yeah, I do know. But
it's Pacey.
And for him, the opportunity was kind of handed on him for this extra credit. He's not quitting. He's not going anywhere. I would do the same.
Oh, yeah. Got to get that C, bro.
Gotta. Jumping back to camping, Jack is like, I'm going to go for a walk and find Ethan. And Jen's like, maybe don't. Like, let him come to you. And he's like, all right, see you later. And he goes, and all of a sudden, it's like, hey there. And he looks up, and Ethan is in a tree. Ethan is in a tree. I know he's setting up his camp stuff or whatever, so he's tying something up there, but it just is the most ridiculous way to introduce him in the scene.
I hate Ethan. I hate his sweater. I hate his face. I hate Ethan. There, I said it.
Hot take.
I just don't like the way he treats Jack. It's just so patronizing, condescending, gay-splaining.
Yes. What was your take on that conversation that they have where basically Jack is like, oh, you knew you were attracted to men at that young of an age. And Ethan's like, being gay isn't just about who you're having sex with or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, Ethan's point was like, well, you're new to being gay. So I'm guessing you haven't kissed anyone or done anything sexual. And Jack says, right. And so then Ethan's like, well, then being gay doesn't have that much to do with sex and kissing. It's more of your identity. Like you knew when you were young and you know these things. And it's just, there's so much more to it than all romance because you don't really get into that until later. I mean, he's right. Obviously he's saying it's more of an identity issue versus like just a sexual preference. It's an identity, yeah, not a sexual
preference.
He's
saying it's not just this like small part of your life. It's everywhere. It's everything. It's you getting nervous to ask me for my number.
He's not wrong, but
it felt like it was coming from someone on the writing staff with that experience or with experience of going through something like that, because it did feel very real and true. But on a board of things of him being condescending to Jack, it is another tick in the tally.
For sure. Oh, so Jen watches Henry sing. She starts to see him differently.
Yeah, he's like, stop trying to be my friend and then pushing me away when my feelings scare you. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, I'm sorry that you miss how I looked at you, but I miss the fact that you never looked at me. Henry's spinning a lot of truth in this episode. He's like, I haven't talked to you in a month. I've been giving you the silent treatment. You didn't even notice. And she's like, huh, you're right.
Poor Henry.
Yeah.
Or not.
Who knows?
Again, I just think he's cute.
He's so cute.
And if someone was obsessed with me, that would be great. I don't know if anyone's ever been this obsessed with me.
It would probably bother me if someone was this obsessed with me, but I wanted it.
Oh my God, no. I'd be like, tell me again what you like about me. What else do you like?
He says something later. Wait, what did he say? Something about requited love.
Oh yeah, he says, oh, you're taking for granted that you're on the requited side of unrequited love. You're getting a little pleasure out of being on the requited side of unrequited love.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so Jen is being a fool in this scene because she is like, she was so moved by the acoustic guitar performance. She's like, it was beautiful. It was more than beautiful. But do you remember in that like 1997 to like 2003, if someone played the guitar, like you were just instantly kind of like into them? I feel like it's kind of passed now.
100%.
That singer, songwriter, acoustic, Jack Johnson, like all of those guys, Ben Harper, when we were like obsessed with those people.
Obsessed. No. All the guys who played guitar in my high school, it was an immediate increase in how hot I thought they were.
Yeah. I wonder what the modern day equivalent is, like if you're a DJ or something.
Oh, God.
If you have a SoundCloud account. Oh, you're so hot.
It's just so funny, too, because in Barbie, when they're like, can I play my guitar at you? Like, that's what it is now. Let me play my guitar at you. But then it was like, oh, my God.
I know. And it was this. Like I said, Jen's being a fool on the scene, but we were all like that. Like you, when someone played guitar, you just, oh, my God, you're so deep. Like they were just so deep and yeah. It's like that Jordan Catalano effect from My So-Called Life. It's just like,
yes.
My God, there's so much to them. Like they're so mysterious. They're so sensitive.
So sensitive.
They're so good at expressing their feelings. But is the song about me? I don't know.
Are they trying to tell me something? Very Dashboard Confessional.
Dashboard. All those guys.
Love it.
John Mayer.
Remember when John Mayer came out? Room for Squares. First album.
Yeah.
Love.
Welcome to the real world. So basically, Jen is like, you have passion and you're intense. And I didn't see that, but I miss it. And you made me feel like I was worth something. And he's not letting her off the hook.
No.
He's doubling down. And he's just like,
he's sick of it.
He's sick of it. She ruined his Christmas break, probably.
Yeah.
But we love Jen. We love both. Okay. Two things can be true.
But he's sick of it. He's not having it.
But it is coming across really selfish because she's like, I miss the way that you made me feel.
Oh, for sure.
And he's like, you might miss how I always looked at you, but I don't miss how you never looked at me. I was like, that's a good line.
That is a good line.
You go. Who wrote this episode?
Hadley and Bonnie.
You go, Hadley and Bobby. You go, Glenn Coco. Poor for you.
Bonnie.
Bonnie? Connie?
Hadley and Bonnie.
I said
you
Bonnie.
You go, Hadley and Bobby. I thought you said Bobby.
Oh, I think I said Bonnie. Dawson is stripping the walls. He and Gail are going through this house and they are tearing everything down.
What if they got to Gail's house and she was putting all the posters up?
He's taking down Jaws. He's taking down Amistad. It's over.
This is earth shattering. He has changed. The kid who hung up these posters
is gone.
I'm not him anymore. That's what he says.
That kid was happy. That kid had parents who were married.
Not anymore. He doesn't exist.
One conversation with Nikki has changed his world.
And this is the blow up.
And Joey is pissed. And I get her feelings. As I said, she's like, you know, you change your identity at every whim. Like Eve changed you. Nikki changed you. What are you doing? And he says, it's not about losing my identity. It's about finding my identity. And how did this become about you? And she said, I asked you to confide in me. You didn't. You confided in her. You've known her 2 minutes. It's a good fight. It's a good fight because whenever he said something, I was like, yes. And
yeah.
Then when she said something, I was like, yes.
That's true. You can see both sides.
I couldn't even pick a side. I just loved it. Yeah.
I don't think that he's throwing his identity out the window because of Nikki. I think that she's raising really good questions to him. And also she has a similar life experience to him, especially with the divorced parents. So it's something that she's been through before. And he has had trouble seeing that part of his journey within anybody else around him. Like everybody has their own troubles and stuff, but nobody has that specific piece. So I feel like having her come along and like not even really say anything to him, but just be like, oh yeah, I know what you're going through. I went through it too, has really changed him.
I agree with you. I don't think he's changing his identity. I think he's just, when you meet someone who's at your level and they're a little more advanced than yes. you can't help but want to change things and compare yeah. yourself.
And I think that that's totally fine. And that's why I think Joey's jealousy in this scene really bothered me, because while obviously she is his best friend, or was at some point his best friend, she in his eyes doesn't have this experience and can't understand it. And he hasn't sorted through it yet. But when somebody else comes to you and is like, this was my experience, maybe this is what you're experiencing, then you can like go internal and figure out what's happening with you. And that might be easier to open up. All this to say, I completely understand why he opened up to Nikki and not to Joey. I don't think it was an intentional slight to Joey at all.
No, I don't either. I'm with you there. We have to talk about the cameo from Mouth from One Tree Hill.
Yes. And same guy, Minkus from Boy Meets World.
I always forget about that because, you know, I never really watched Boy Meets World. Shocking to many.
Shocking to me. And especially because it would have really increased your appreciation for working with Topanga.
Yes, I have worked with her. She's directed many of my episodes. I just never got into it. You know, there was a certain age where I was just watching older, like yeah. way older, like 90210, Melrose Place. And that was the era. I don't think I watched anything very kiddish at that age.
We may have talked about this before, but I feel like we had opposite journeys because my brother was much younger than me. And I feel like you were the youngest in your household. So you were watching up to like meet with your parents and your brother. And I was watching down mm-hmm. out of necessity. So we kind of split off at this time. I watched a lot of younger stuff and you watched a lot of older stuff.
Yeah. He plays one of the kids in the play. He just has one line, but, you know, a star.
And he will be back in a second episode. I looked it up specifically to see if there would be another opportunity to give him a proper shout out. So I think there will.
He is now the second One Tree Hill person, because Kenny Reeling is a One Tree Hill, as we talked about. Kenny Reeling from the election episode season 2, a few episodes in season 2. And he will not be the last One Tree Hill actor to appear, shall we say.
Well, as you know, I didn't watch One Tree Hill, but he was like a regular, right? He was in most episodes, this guy?
Yes, yes. He played Mouth.
Cool.
Big character. Well, you have to watch One Tree Hill. I mean, it happens.
One day.
At least season one. So Jen and Henry make up. She says, you know, maybe I was a little hasty and I'm sorry I was careless with your feelings. You're a lot more mature than I thought. You might be 2 years younger, but
you're older than me.
You're cool. You're deep.
She's like, if one of us is younger than the other.
Yeah.
It's certainly not you or something like that. Okay, Jen.
I know. And I just have my heart. I feel like that's a false statement. Even if he's mature, there's no way that he could be more mature than she is, coming from New York City and living all the life that she's lived. I don't know. I don't buy that. But
whatever.
She's realized, did I make a mistake not giving you a chance? But that's where we leave them in this episode.
Then she heads back to Jack, finds him at the tent. He kind of fills her in on his night with Ethan and apologizes to her for making her leave, which I don't even think we really touched on. He's like, can you go on a walk and come back around midnight? And she's like, no, I'll just go home and come back and get you in the morning. She says it's a happy moment in a girl's life when her gay best friend dumps her for a boy. They should make a greeting card for that.
Yeah. And when Ethan and Jack are going to bed, they talk about Jen, and Ethan's like, let me guess, you got set up for a school dance and you got her a corsage and blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's a tale as old as time. And I'm just like, do we need another scene of Ethan mansplaining? But here we are.
Here we are.
He's basically like, Jack, you're a stupid bitch. And everything you've lived is so typical and normal.
Nothing original here.
Your life is a carbon copy. You're a dime a dozen, you gay loser.
You're on the football team and had everyone wear makeup. Classic gay experience.
Your best friend spit in your English teacher's face. Snore.
Outed with a poem in English class. Yeah, I know.
Your girlfriend drew you nude and then everyone saw it. Old news, bucko. And Joey gives Dawson the Imagine poster.
Cute.
It's a new phase for Dawson. Okay, he's going to try new things. He's going to expand his horizons. But she is his North Star, and she's here to remind him that he doesn't need to change because he already has other layers to himself.
I liked it. I liked that she came with the poster. I liked that she realized that it wasn't about her. It was about him, the reason that he talked to Nikki. And I liked that she said, even when I don't, when it seems like I'm not listening, I hear you. And just promise me, if you're not going to share with me, keep sharing with somebody, like keep talking to somebody, because I think you need it. And he's like, I hear you too.
I think she says, share with me, doesn't she?
I thought she said, I want you to share with me, but just make sure you're sharing with somebody. I think.
Yes, because it's okay that she realizes it's okay that he shared with Nikki. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and that's it. That's where we leave them.
Yeah. Well, there's an Andy Pacey scene, but the Andy storyline was a little attacked on.
What you watching?
I watched Presumed Innocent on Apple TV with Jake Gyllenhaal, which I actually worked on as a COVID supervisor tester person. I didn't really have anything to do with the show creatively, but I did all the COVID testing for it. And it was a nice little watch. Even though I worked on the show, I didn't read any of the scripts. So everything I watched was news to me, and it was great cast.
And what is the premise?
The premise is that Jake Gyllenhaal plays a district attorney in the district attorney office of Chicago, and his fellow DA is murdered. And it's a woman he was having an affair with. And did he do it? Did he not? He has a wife. He has kids. Who done it? Who done it? Trial. It's not the most groundbreaking show as far as true crime. Like if you watch a lot of true crime, it's not going to blow your mind, but it's solid and the cast is just unreal. So.
And it's a limited series, did you say?
Yes. There were 8 episodes, I believe. And then I think it got renewed for a second season, but they might do like a new cast.
Like an anthology kind of thing. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I am watching a show, I don't know if I've talked about it on here before, but it is the perfect, if you like dogs, it's like the perfect reality, like mental bubblegum show. It's called Doghouse UK. It is on Max, and it is a show set in a British dog rescue, and people come in and you get like a little bit of their backstory, and they're looking to adopt a dog, and they talk about what kind of dog they're looking for or their lifestyle. And then the staff at the place are like characters on the show. It's a reality show. And they find these dogs. They pair them up. They have a meeting. And like, you get to watch them meet for the first time. And sometimes it's a fit and sometimes it's not. It's like a little bit emotional. It's a little bit happy. It's a little bit like sometimes it's people who have lost their partner. Yeah, like, yeah. Or sometimes it's like a autistic kid who's like really looking for the friend to like bring out certain things. It's so cute. I love it.
How many seasons? How many episodes?
Tons. Like, okay. I think there's like 8 seasons or something like that.
And there's like how many adoptions in episode? Like 2?
Probably like 3, I would say. And then so you go through the adoptions, but you don't know how they pan out. So like you see the first meeting and then they leave you there. And then at the end, they do like a recap of all 3. Like today, sometime later, they call it. And then you go to the home of the people. And like sometimes they try to mislead you. Like, we wanted to adopt Buddy, but we weren't sure. And then like Buddy runs out. And it's really cute. Highly recommend. It's just something we discovered one night when we were like poking around on HBO, and I love that.
So that's episode 311, Barefoot and Cape Fest. A solid episode, a lot better than I remember. But what should we drink for next week's episode 312?
Weekend in the country. Next week we will be drinking the B&B, and you will need brandy and Benedictine liqueur. So that's it. A simple one.
I wonder if part of the reason there's this mid-season 3 dead zone for me, I wonder if it has to do, I know this sounds silly, but the titles of the episodes kind of bother me. Like Barefoot and Cape Fest and A Weekend in the Country are so benign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I feel that I don't connect to those titles, so I don't have like a connection to the episodes. Or maybe it's I don't connect to the titles because I don't have a connection to the episode. But I do have a connection to the episode now.
This episode and next episode are both really good episodes, so
next week's is so freaking good.
So good. I can't wait. I'll see you then.
Okay, bye.